Now we're holding on page Nun Zayin in Tainis Ois Lamed Hei. We learned previously about that if a person is comes from a place where they're not fasting to a place where they are, or if he forgets and eats, then he shouldn't, he still has to join together with the tzibur in their tzara and continue fasting with them. So that we had some statements in the Gemara related to that. So now the Gemara continues on that topic. When the Jewish people or some part of them are having a time of tsar, or pirush echad mehem, and one of them separates himself. Now we don't mean, for example, let's say where he can run away and to safety. We're talking about, in other words, where he could stay behind and help, and he instead chooses to, or at least join together with the tsara of the tzibur, and he chooses to just figure, I'll sit at home and I'll enjoy myself, and I don't care what's happening to them. Then the two malachi asharis that accompany a person, which is, Marshal relates these to the two malachim that come with a person Friday night home from shul. Anyway, they come, they place their hands on his head, and they say, this person, and they name him by name. Ben Yoyada points out, after all, a person's name is the source of their chayus. So therefore, they mention his name, who separated himself from the tzibur, he should not see the nechama, the comfort of the tzibur. In other words, in Pashtos, it means exactly that. In other words, eventually the tzara will be over, and the tzibur will be happy with the nechama. He shouldn't get to see that. There are a couple of the mafarshim who point out. I mean, Yon Yaakov points out, for example, that what kind of an onish is that? I mean, he anyway said he doesn't care about their tzara, so why is he going to care if he doesn't see their simcha either? So Yon Yaakov says it means he won't get to see the Nechamas Tzion v'Yerushalayim. Ben Yehoyada says somewhat similarly that it means he won't get to see a Nechama, a different Nechama of the Tzibur, not necessarily this one, but a different one. Whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that because if he doesn't join together, Al-Derech, like we have the expression, so here, by the same token, a person who's Mis'abel with Tzibur and Atzara is Zoycha to see the Nechama, and if not, then not. Then we learn in another braisa, when the tzibur is in a state of tzar, a person should not say, I'll go to my house, and I'll eat and drink, and peace to you, my soul. So Marsha points out, here we're talking about, in other words, the previous one was talking about where maybe he himself is not feeling at shalom, he himself is also suffering from the tzara of the tzibur, but he figures, I'm not going to bother joining with them. This one is talking about somebody who actually feels, he himself feels in a state of shalom. Everything's fine and dandy with me, and who cares about them? The im oisakein, if a person acts like that, all of our kosevayim, the pasuk describes such a person. The Navi criticizes people in Yerushalayim in the time of Sancheirev, and later on at the time of the Churban, where they say, we'll just live it up. They say here, the Navi says, here you have rejoicing and gladness. They're killing and shechting cattle and sheep. They're eating meat and drinking wine, and they say to themselves, let's eat and drink, because tomorrow we're going to die. In other words, they figure, the Nevi'im are saying that terrible things are going to happen. Well, then meanwhile, we may as well live it up. And who cares about what's going to happen in the future? Maksiv Basri, what does the next pasuk continue? V'nigla v'ozno Hashem Tzvakos. It was revealed in my ears, Hashem Tzvakos. Some of the Mephoshim say, the Navi is saying, Hashem revealed to my ears the following statement. Others learn that it means Hashem himself says, I hear with my ears what these people are saying. Anyway, the point that what's going to happen as a result of that is, im yichupar oven azelachem ad tumusun, that this avera of yours will not be forgiven until you die. From this, the Gemara learns in Yuma, this is an example of chilul Hashem. And the Gemara learns over there that this is where we see that chilul Hashem, a person may have, he does tshuva, he brings a korban, he even has yisurim, and still, and Yom Kippur passes, and even with all of that, it's not an escape to him until his death, because chilul Hashem is one of the more serious kinds of aveiros. So this is an example, when a person acts like that, is an example of chilul Hashem, where he says that we don't have to worry about what the Nevi'im are saying. So that's the kind of person we're describing, who says, okay, so they're having tzara, it doesn't matter, I'm gonna live it up, I myself am at peace, so... So Maharshal points out, now in a way, this is only the Beinonis. This is not even the worst kind. Next, the Gemara is going to continue with the out and out Rishayim. These Beinonim, at least, they recognize that that they are eventually going to drink the cup of punishment, to use the metaphor that's used throughout Tanakh. But they figure, meanwhile, until that comes, we'll live it up. Meanwhile, then you have the next grid. So at least they have the source that their Misa is Machaper for them. But so Adkan Midas Beinanim, up to this point, we're talking about the Beinanim, the average people. Avul Midas Rishoyim Maksiv, then what do you have when it comes to the out Rishoyim? So another pasuk also in Yeshaya describes such people, where they say, "Hey, saw you come, let's come, Echayayin, I'll buy wine, the Nisva Asheker, and we will drink together strong drink." Marsha over here refers to explanations of his that he brings in a couple of other places in Shas, where the person says, "Fine, you can't afford to buy drinks yourself, fine, I'll stay in the drinks, and you guys can come and party at my expense." The Gomer, and they say that we'll keep on doing this day after day. It actually brings the end of the pasuk. They're going to say tomorrow is going to be the same as today. Even bigger, an even bigger party. Like they're not even, at least the previous group where they're saying, they're saying, we recognize that tomorrow we're going to die, but today we're going to live it up. Meanwhile, we're saying the Rishoyim, we don't even think that tomorrow we're going to die. They have no thoughts of it at all. Maxiv Basri, what is the next pasuk continue? Had Sadik Ovad, that Sadik is lost from the world. The Ein Ish Soma Lev Gomer, and nobody's putting it to heart. Nobody's considering why did the Sadik die. And the pasuk finishes off. Kimipnei Hara Nesef at Sadik. The reason is before the evil comes, the Sadik is gathered in. Meaning, in other words, in order that this way, so Rashi gives two explanations. One is it means this way that the tzaddik shouldn't have to see the suffering of the others, which he's going to, including these Rishoyim, which would be a terrible tsar for him. So therefore, the Eibishter removes him from the world first. Or the other meaning is that Hashem doesn't want that. The other meaning is that Hashem doesn't want the tzaddik to be available to daven for rachamim for such people, and therefore he removes him from the world. Maharsha elsewhere, again, when he talks about this, particularly at the end of Sanhedrin, he mentions twice in that pasuk the word nesofen, v'anche chesed nesofen, ve'in mevin, and he explains that the first you're talking about, you have these people who are gathering together for their parties. That's the first meaning of nesofen, and then you have the second, that tzaddik is being gathered in a different sense, namely he's passing away, and nobody's paying attention, that it's because they're making these riotous parties and thinking that we can live it up forever. So a person can't act that way. Eliot Tsar Odom Matsibur. A person rather has to join in the Tsar of the Tzibur. And in fact, there are Gusois. The Shiltis brings a Gusa that it means not just a regular person, it means even a Tzaddik Gomer. Even the example the Gemara is going to bring here is with Moshe by the war with Amalek and other examples like that, where the Tzaddik himself in no way is being harmed by the Tzaras Tzibur. Nevertheless, he should join in with them, just as we find Moshe Rabbeinu did with the Jewish people. So Shaken Matsinu but Moshe Rabbeinu, Shatzir Atzmei Matsibur. We find that Moshe Rabbeinu did exactly that. That even though so the Tzibur was suffering, and Moshe was not, first of all, because he wasn't involved in the war, and second of all, Maharsha points out, he knew anyway that his tefillah is going to win the war for them. So he knew Benevuah, if he lifts up his hands and everybody is looking at his hands, as we learned in Rosh Hashanah, and therefore focusing on Hashem, then they're guaranteed to win the war. They don't know that. Never, so therefore, Moshe is not really suffering with the same tzara that they are, because he knows the outcome. Nevertheless, Shenema, the pasuk says, "V'day Moshe kvedim," when Moshe's hands were feeling heavy, "V'yitchu evan v'yasimu tachtav," they took a stone, Aaron and Hur, and placed it underneath him. "V'yeshev aleha," and he sat on it. The question is, why a stone? Rashi brings this on the pasuk. "V'chila hay lo Moshe kar echad ekeses achas leishev aleha." Did Moshe not have a single pillow or a single cushion to sit on? Ela kach omer Moshe. It means that Moshe said, "Hoyu b'Yisrael shurin b'tzar." Since the Jewish people are in a state of tzar because they're fighting the war and they don't know what the outcome is going to be, afani ayemoyim b'tzar, then I will also join with them in tzar. And in that, he's acting like the Eibishter, because as the Eibishter himself says on himself, "Imayin echib b'tzara." So therefore, so Moshe was doing the right thing over there, and a person should learn from that. Again, even in a future generation, a person is a tzaddik gomer. Nevertheless, he should realize he has to join together with the tzara of the tzibur. And the flip side of what we said before, if somebody does join in the tzar of the tzibur, then he will have the schus to see the comfort of the tzibur when the gzeira or the tzar or whatever it is that is over. The Shema Yoma Oda me maybe. So a person might say, well, who's gonna testify against me? If I'm staying at home and nobody knows what I'm doing between the four walls of my house, then how is anybody going to know what I'm doing that therefore I can be held to account? You should realize Avne Basishal Odam, Bakuris Basishal Odam, Meidmoy, the very stones and beams of a person's house will testify against him what he's doing. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki evan mikir tizak, a stone will cry out from the wall, v'chofis me'etz yanena, and a kofis, which is a half brick, will answer it from between the wood. At the beginning of Baba Basra, you have govil, gozis, kfisin, levenim, the various materials that they would build walls out of. Kfisin are half bricks. A normal brick back then was 3 by 3 tefachim. A half brick is 3.5 by 1 tefach. And Rashi explains over here, they would often put it between two. Post was also mentions in Baba Basra over there, based on this pasuk, that they would put it between layers of wood for strength, I guess. So that's the kofis will answer from between the wood. We know there's the piskim and hayom yom that mentions this pasuk and says that right now people step all over the ground and doesn't say anything on the Moshe Mashiach. It's going to say bulach was tretzdaf mir if you're not saying words of Torah, etc. So here we're talking about that also it'll testify about a person what he's doing in the privacy of his house. The Rashba has an explanation over here that what it means is like this. First of all, he says, when we talk about testifying, it can mean, first of all, that you're bringing to light something that was hidden before. And then you also have the word edus then can be used in a more general sense to mean anytime you're publicizing something, which not even publicizing, where you can tell from something is happening, and from it you can deduce what happened. That kind of thing can also be called in a looser sense edus. He says that's what the Gemara means over here, not literally that stones and the bricks are going to cry out. What it means is when we see what happens in a person's house, when we see inevitably so what are we doing? We're saying he's staying at home and eating and drinking and enjoying himself and not worrying about the tzara of the tzibur. So now what happens is inevitably his neighbors, Avne Beis, Vekodes Beis, the Rashba says, refers not to his house itself, not to the beams and stones of his house, but rather to his neighbors. Inevitably, they're going to see what he's doing and they're going to end up publicizing it. So a person should realize he's not going to get away with that kind of thing. And then the following statements in the Gemara are also talking about, the Rashba explains, we don't literally mean that they're going to call out and testify. We mean that through them, the matter is going to become known. We'll go through the various ones that it mentions here in the Gemara, and then we'll talk about what the Rashba and Marsha and others say about it. So, Dvei Rav Shila Amri, in the yeshiva of Rav Shila, they said not just the stones and the wood of the house, not just the stones and the bricks of the house, but Beis Malachi Asharis and Malavin Lela Adam. We just said a person is accompanied by two Malachi Asharis. And by the way, this has implications in halacha. You have a halacha in Shulchan Aruch that says before a person goes to the bathroom, he should say a short thing to take leave of the Malachim and tell them, look, I have to go to the bathroom. You guys don't know what that kind of thing is, so wait out here from me. Nowadays, it says in Shulchan Aruch, we don't say it because we don't hold ourselves on the level that we're accompanied by Malachim all the time. But there is the idea that a person is accompanied by two Malachim. We'll talk about in a minute what the Rashba and what Marsha say about it. So hey, Me'idin Olav, they will testify about what he's doing in private. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Ki Malachim Yitzav Aloch, Hashem will command his Malachim about you, meaning not just command them to protect you, but also command them to tell what you've been doing. Reb Chidka says there's another one. Nishmasi Shalodim Himi Idolov. A person's own neshama will give edus on him about what he was doing. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Mishecheves Chekecha, from the one who rests in your lap, in your bosom, Shmur Pischa Picha, guard the openings of your mouth. Poshit Pshat, it means, in other words, that Navi is talking about a time, like it talks about at the end of Soita, where a person's own family members are rising up against him, and therefore a person can't even trust his own closest family members, even his spouse, and therefore he has to be careful what he says around them. But here, the Gemara is doushening that it means your neshama is what rests in your bosom, and therefore you have to be careful with what you say with your mouth, because your neshama knows where he is, what's going on, and it will go and testify about you. There is the point, by the way, There is the point, by the way, Ben Yehoyada makes a point. I mean, the neshama and the body are judged together. How is the neshama supposed to give testimony when it itself is going to be judged together with the body? So he explains, because we know that there can be a person comes back in a gilgul, and you may have parts of the neshama that were already fixed up in a previous gilgul, and now there's parts that have yet to be fixed up. So the parts that were already nistaken previously, those can testify about what he's doing. The Yesh Emim, a Vod of Shalodim, the Idim boy, others say that a person's own limbs will testify against him. Shenema, as the passage says, Atem Edai Nu'um Hashem. You, plural, are my Edim, says Hashem. So therefore, so in the simple sense, it means the Jewish people are the Edim, that Hashem runs the world, and Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, and so forth. The whole fact that we know the Torah is true is basically based on Eidus from generation to generation throughout the Jewish people. That's one meaning. That's the simple meaning of Atam Edai Nu'um Hashem. But here the Gemara is taking it in another sense, that it means that Hashem is speaking to the limbs of the body and saying that you are my Eidim. So first of all, the Rashba gives an explanation over here again. So the bricks and the stones, he said, meant the neighbor. Then we're saying that even if you might have a person, who doesn't have any neighbors, or his neighbors don't notice what he's doing or whatever, but you still have, eventually he's going to, how is it going to be found out what he's doing in secret? Eventually he's going to end up doing something wrong, like this. Hashem usually has malachim protecting him, meaning that they're the conduit for Hashem's hashgacha over him, that he shouldn't go wrong. Now Hashem is going to cause that those malachim are not going to guard him in doing that, and therefore he's going to end up doing something wrong publicly, and then from that people will find out what he did wrong in private as well. Then the third one, Reb Chidka had said about when he says Nishmasa Shel Adam, so the Rashba says it means that, in other words, you might have, fine, a person manages to make it through life without anybody ever finding out what he really was. It'll still be known in the next world, in Olam Haba. And then the fourth one, a Vod of Shel Adam, Heim Eidim Boy, means that sometimes you may have a person that where things happen to his actual body in this world, where there that demonstrates what he had done wrong. And he gives examples like that we find in Tanakh, where a person was injured or harmed in one particular part of his body, from which we can see that he acted wrongly with that particular part. So that's his explanation. That's his explanation in brief. Maosha goes on and says like this. What it means is, he says that the stones and the beams and whatnot is you have that. So he says all of it is talking about, unlike the Rashba, who says some of the things we're talking about in this world, Maosha learns that all of them we're talking about La'asid Lava. All of them we're talking about in the Olam Ha'emes. Now, what you have is, you have his house, in other words, as if he can't hide within the four walls of his house. Hashem will make sure that what he does inside will be known on the outside. As far as the other three things, we're talking about how it's going to be judged in the Olam Ha'emes. So you have three things he explains over here. You have where it mentions the malachim, his neshama, and his body. So the malachim represent that a person does ma'asim tovim and ma'asim that are not so tovim. And we know, as it says in Pirkei Avos, that a person who does a mitzvah, he gets himself one praklit, and he does one aveda, he gets for himself one kateger. And particularly, you have why do we have 365 loses? Says because it corresponds to the 365 days of the year, where every day except for Yom Kippur, the malachim Avos is able to be mekatzer on him. So therefore, that represents that the malachim that were created through what he does, then they testify against him, and they say on him that you did this aveda on this and this day. The Gemara actually mentions it's not here in Ein Yaakov, but it is later on in a further piece which is a continuation of this one later on. O Islam Advob, the Gemara mentions that these malachim are going to testify against him and say you did such and such on such and such a day. Why they mention that day? Because they're the malach that has the particular affinity with that day, with that loisa said that connects with that day. Then you have when a person does, so that's when a person is doing averus b'maisa, so that creates malachim. Then you have, Marsha goes on to say, you have a person who does averus with speech. That has to do with the neshama. A person's neshama is what gives him the power of speech. In fact, uniquely among all creatures, when the Eibishter creates Adam in Parashas Bereishis, when it says over there, "Vayihi ha'Adam l'nefesh chaya," that Hashem made him into a living soul. Targum Onkelos translates it, "L'ruach memalala," that Hashem made him into a speaking form of life. Because only human beings, that's why we're called medaber. So therefore, so that has to do with the neshama. Therefore, when a person uses his speech wrongly, then therefore it's the neshama that comes and testifies him, against him. Then you have, Marsha goes on to say, then you have when a person is over on an essay, namely that he fails to do it. Why do we have 248 essays corresponding to the 248 limbs in the body? Because every one has a connection with a certain mitzvah. So a person fails to do a certain mitzvah's essay, then that particular aver comes and testifies against him. So he says that's why you have these three groups. So each of these manda omers is not arguing with each other. They're talking about different aspects of the judgment, in the olam ha'emes, depending what kind of thing a person did, whether it was in machshava, in dibur, or in maisa. There's other angles on it also. Ben Yehoyada points out that we mentioned particularly the stones testifying against him. That refers in particular to the Yetzihara, where we learned in Masechta Sukkah that one of the nicknames for the Yetzihara is the stone, Lev Ha'ed. So therefore it means the very Yetzihara that he followed, that he shouldn't have, comes and testifies against him that he listened to it. So now the subject of the Masechta is fasting. So now the Gemara gets into the question of the chalal, when a person takes on voluntary fasts, is that a good thing? So Omar Shmuel, kol yosh b'tainus nikra choyte, a person who takes voluntary fasts on himself is called a sinner. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, v'chipper, last week's parasha, v'chipper olav ma'asha chota alam nafesh, when a nozir becomes tomei, the koyin brings a kapara for him for the fact that he sinned against a soul. Now v'chipper eza nefesh, chota zeh, what kind of aveira against his soul did he do? In other words, Rashi points out chota alam nafesh suggests that he killed somebody. So the nozir didn't kill anybody. Rather, it's that he afflicted himself, but he deprived himself of wine. And Rashi mentions there's no mitzvah for a person to afflict himself. In fact, it would be good if a tzaddik is able to enjoy this world as well. So when he's on the when he feels that he has to afflict himself, then Shmuel is saying that he's called a choyte. It means that because he afflicted himself, he deprived himself of wine. And therefore for that he's called chota al nafesh. Elsewhere, actually, the Gemara points out, Marsha mentions that the context of that pasuk is actually talking about a nozer tomei. So it's not necessarily talking about a nozer who successfully completed his nazirus. In context, it's talking about a nozer who became tomei, and became tomei la nefesh, and therefore he has to cut his hair and bring his korbanos and restart his nazirus. The Gemara elsewhere explains the reason why it mentions it in that connection, according to Shmuel, is because the fact is then it means he did doubly. First, by taking on Nazirus, and second of all, compounding it by becoming Tomei. But in fact, the concept would apply, according to Shmuel, even just for the first time that he took on Nazirus. And the Gemara says, Sovrati Hai Tana. Shmuel in that holds like the following Tana. The Tana Yerub Lozer Kapper Berebi Oimer. Berebi, by the way, doesn't mean the son of Rebbe. Berebi or Beribi, sometimes it comes out in Shas. Rashi explains, means the great Tamid Choch. There was a title for particularly outstanding Talmid Chacham. Anyway, Omer, he says, Ma Talmid Lema Asher Chota Alam Nefesh. The same thing. What does it mean that a person sinned against a soul? V'chi be'ez a nefesh chota zeh. What soul did he sin against? He didn't kill anybody or anything like that. Elish et sir atzmi min ayayin. It's rather because he deprived himself of wine. And Rebbe Lozer HaKapo continues, V'alei dvorim kav v'chomer. Now, based on that, we can make a kav v'chomer. Who the only physical pleasure he deprived himself of is wine, because the other things, the haircut is not necessarily a physical pleasure, and not becoming tummy mess it's an inconvenience, but it's not a pleasure per se to be able to become tummy mess. The physical pleasure that he's abstaining from is wine, particularly. So a nikra choyte, and he's called a sinner for that. Well, then if a person takes on himself voluntary fast and deprives himself of everything, Allah has kama vakama, then how much more so that he should be called a choyte for that? On the other hand, so that's one opinion. On the other hand, Rabbi Lozer, I mean Nikra Kodesh, Rabbi Lozer and Rabbi Lozer the Tana means so this can either be Rabbi Lozer the Tana, which is Rabbi Lozer ben Shamua, or it can be Rabbi Lozer the Amora, which is Rabbi Lozer ben Pedas. So either he's a Tana and he's arguing with Rabbi Lozer Akapur, or he's an Amora and he's arguing with Shmuel. Anyway, he says Nikra Kodesh. On the contrary, a person who fasts voluntarily is called Kodesh, is called a holy person. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, Kodesh yeh, gadol peras sa'aroshe, he shall be holy, He grows the hair of his head long. Now, in context, you could say that it means that the hair should be holy, but the Gemara's understanding, Rabbi Elazar is understanding that it means the Nazir himself is holy. So Rashi points out actually the Gemara is going to point out that according to Shmuel, the word Kaddish is going on the hair, and meanwhile, according to Rabbi Elazar HaKaper, and meanwhile, according to Rabbi Elazar, he's called a Choyte, a Shechote al Nefesh, specifically when he became Tomei, but not otherwise. So then Rabbi Elazar continues, Vale Dvarim Kavachomer. Such a person who deprived himself of only one pleasure, wine, Nikra Kaddish, and for that deposit calls him Kaddish here. Amitsar Atzma, we call Dover, a person who deprives himself of everything, Alachas Kamavakama, how much more so that he deserves to be called Kaddish. In a way, actually, you know, the Rif points out over here. I mean, obviously, both of them are true. When we're talking about again that he became Tomei in the middle of his Nazirus, then we can call him a Choyte for that. But on top of that, also Bechlal, when a person fasts for his Averus, if he doesn't then follow that up with Tshuva, then yeah, he's called a Choyte. If he does, if he uses the Tshuva, if he uses the fast as a springboard to do proper Tshuva, then the fact is the fast helps clean up his Averus, and then he can be called a Kodesh for that. So for the Shmuel Ha'ikri Kaddish, so you have to ask, according to Shmuel, isn't he called Kaddish? So what does he do with the fact that the Pasuk calls him Kaddish? So the answer is Ahud Demotzi Mitzar Nafshe. First of all, that applies when he's able to deprive himself. He doesn't feel the deprivation. And also, Ahu Agado Perakoi, really that Pasuk is not referring so much to the Nazir himself. It's referring to the hair that he grows, that the hair itself is considered holy. What about a coin to Rabbi Elazar who says that he's called a choite? And the answer is Ahud Masayv Nafshe, that he's called a choite because he allowed himself to become tummy. So each one has their opinion of whether he's primarily a choite or primarily kaddish. So the Gemara asked me, Omer Rabbi Elazar, did Rabbi Elazar though really say that a person who fasts is considered a kaddish? The same Rabbi Elazar says, a person should always see himself or evaluate himself as though a holy one is within his stomach. So Rashi explains it means that he should consider as though his kishkas themselves are holy, and therefore you're not allowed to weaken them and deprive them. Tosfos actually has a different explanation on it, which a number of achronim deal with exactly what Tosfos means by this. Where on the face of it, the kaddish over here refers to Hashem, so as if Hashem is inside his stomach. So what does that mean? How could you even talk about Hashem being inside his stomach? So for us, I guess, who grow up on Hashem is here, Hashem is there, Hashem is fully everywhere, we don't find it so difficult. But there are achronim who find it difficult to speak like that, and therefore they have other explanations of what Tosfos means exactly. So Shenema, as the pasuk says, Bekir b'chokod. So in other words, according to that way of looking at it, it would be like, so to speak, you can't deprive Hashem of the food that you would be putting in your stomach. So Shenema, as the pasuk says, Bekir b'chokodish, inside you is holy. In fact, Rashi brings, we learned earlier in the parak, we learned the pasuk more fully. This is the second half of a pasuk that says, Bekir b'chokodish, v'loy ovoy be'ir. Hashem said, the holy one is among you, and I won't come into the city, which we learned earlier in the parak, means that Hashem says, I won't come into your Shalayim Shalmaila until I'm able to come into your Shalayim Shalmata. As long as the Beis HaMikdash here on earth is not built, then Hashem's Shechina won't enter the Yerushalayim Shalmaila either. So here Rashi says, the Gemara is taking in a similar sense. Because the Kaddish, because the person's own Kishkis, or Hashem, is in a state of Tsar, therefore Hashem says, I won't come into the Ir Shamayla, into the Yerushalayim Shamayla, until I rebuild the Yerushalayim Shamata. So we see, in other words, that a person should not be fasting and depriving himself. Maharsham makes another point as well. Eating a meal can also be called Kedusha. That person has to, after all, Kaddish Atzmacha B'Motolach means that a person eats, but he eats in a way that's that itself is an avoid. So Rabbi Elazar seems to be saying it's not a good idea to fast. So how can he then say that a person who fasts is called Kaddish? And the answer is, like Kasha, it depends whether he's able to deprive himself, he's able to stand the fast, and it doesn't make him weak in Torah and Avodah, then it's a good thing. As opposed to when he can't, it's going to interfere with his learning or his davening or whatever, then he's called a choyte. This is why the Alter Rebbe brings at the beginning of Igeres HaTshuva, that even though you have in Sifrei Kabbalah and Sifrei Musar and whatever, it talks about all kinds of huge numbers of fasts that people should be fasting for various kinds of Averis, nevertheless, the Alter Rebbe says, do only the bare minimum of them because we don't have the koyach nowadays to fast like that without it interfering with our Avodah, and therefore instead give lots of tzedakah. So that's how we reconcile the two statements of Rebbe Elazar. Rish Lakish am a nikra chosid. Rish Lakish goes beyond Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar had said that a person who fasts voluntarily, as long as he's able to manage with it and it doesn't bother him, is called a kaddish. Rish Lakish goes beyond that. He's called nikra chosid. He's called a chosid. Where you have in the Brysons at the end of Soita and then Avodah Zarah and other places where the Brysa of Pinchas Ben Yair is brought, you have Chosid is a level or a couple of levels beyond Kedusha. So therefore, it's a higher level. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Goimel Nafshay Ish Chosid, a person whose Goimel, his soul, is a man of Chesed, but Oichur She'ere Achzari, and somebody who wounds his flesh. Oichur means he wounds, like Achau Tamosi. She'ere means his flesh, his body. Achzari is cool. So what's the Goimel Nafshe Ish Chesed? Rashi gives two explanations. One is that Goimel means he weans himself, he stays away from food. So we're saying he's called Ish Chesed, Meloshin Chosin. Then Rashi's second explanation is Goimel is that Meloshin Tagmel, he hands over his life to Hashem, and he says, I'm willing to fast and to deprive myself for the sake of Hashem and to give over my life and give over my body to Hashem. So we're saying he's called Ish Chosid. Tosfos gives a different explanation that the two halves of the Pesukim are talking about two different types of people. You have the one who's Goimel Nafshoi, who gives to his nefesh what it needs in terms of food. He doesn't fast, so he's called Chosid. And on the other hand, V'Urcho She'ere, a person who wounds his body by fasting, Achzori, then he's called Kul. So according to Rashi, both halves of the Pesuk are talking about the Chosid who fasts. And again, the difference would be whether he's able to manage it or not. According to Tosfos, the first half of the pasuk is talking about the person who does not fast, and the second half is talking about the one who does. Maharsha says that's exactly what Rish Lakish means. In other words, that's how you can reconcile the two halves of the pasuk with each other. So the Gemara continues. Amar Rav Yirmiyah ba'Aba, Amar Rish Lakish, Ein Tamid Chacham Rashoi Leisha B'Taimus. A Tamid Chacham is not allowed to take on himself voluntary fast. He's reducing the work of Hashem. Meaning, in other words, he's going to be weak, and now he's not going to be able to learn Torah properly. So therefore, he shouldn't do that. And Omer of Sheshes, Hai Bar Be Rab, the Yosef B'Tam Nisa, when a young Talmud Chacham, a yeshiva person, sits and fasts, Kalba Leichol Sheruse, then a dog should eat his meal. So Rashi explains, in other words, it's as if like he's fasting, he's not really accomplishing anything constructive by it. It's as though he's fasting because a dog ate his food and he doesn't have anything to eat. But he's not actually accomplishing anything constructive by it, because again, he's Melechus Shemayim. So that would be, in other words, Marsha explains, as we said, that would be where he's not able to be Mitzayah Nafshe. Then Marsha brings another explanation the other way around. We're talking about where he is able to be Mitzayah Nafshe, where his fasting does not interfere with his learning Torah. Then we're saying it's as if a dog ate his food and he had no hanah from it, and the same way he accomplished something constructive by attacking not having hanah from food at a time when it doesn't bother him and doesn't prevent him from learning Torah. So according to that, the leichol kabel l'shirose would be more of a positive statement that, in other words, that in that case he has really done a full-fledged fast that actually counts for him for something. Iyun Yaakov points out also that dogs often get into fights where they don't need to, so therefore this person is fasting where it's not appropriate. He's getting into fasting where it's not necessary or appropriate for him to. And a dog also goes hungry a lot of times, and it doesn't get any sky for it. That's its nature, that it doesn't have a lot of food available to it. So the same way we're saying a Talmud Chacham will fast is like that, where he's not really accomplishing. Again, Iyun Yaakov takes like the explanation in Rashi. And like the first explanation in Marsha, that he's not accomplishing anything constructive with it, no more so than a dog is with its fasting. In fact, they tell a story in this connection, I think it was involving Rav Zusha Anapol, or I don't remember, where there was this fellow in his times who had the idea that he wants to be Zoycha to Gilui of the Yom. So he eats only a bare minimum every day, and he rolls Gilgul Shelag, and he does all these other kinds of things, and nothing happens. So eventually he goes to Rav Zusha, whichever tzaddik it was, and asks him what's going on. And Rav Zusha takes him out to the stable and shows him, look at the horse over here. It eats very little. It sleeps standing up. It rolls in the snow. And after all, it's only a horse. So it's not enough to just be doing these things. There has to be some genuine kavana behind it. The Chidol also points out the comparison with the dog is, we know that in the first Beis Hamikdash, the fire on the Mizbeach was in the shape of a lion, and the second Beis Hamikdash, where they were on a lower level of Gilui Shechina, that not the Avodah hadn't been accomplished properly, therefore it was in the shape of a dog, so therefore again it represents here that the person is accomplishing his Avodah in an incomplete way, like the dog-like fire in the second Beis Hamikdash. Okay. Getting back to what we said before about when a person acts a certain way, then the various things, we said the beams of his house and his Evorim and his Neshama and so forth come and testify against him. So continuing on that topic, the Gemara continues, when the Pasuk says, Kel Emunah Ve'en Ovel, Hashem is trustworthy and there's no injustice, that means, Kel Emunah means Kishem Shenifroim and Rishoyim La'olam Haba, just like Hashem pays back the Rishoyim, in Olam Haba, filo avera kalash oisin, even for the most minute avera that they did, Hashem is not going to let anything slide. Tach nifroim na tzaddikim, but Olam Hazeh, al avera kalash oisin, the same way Hashem punishes the tzaddikim in this world for even the tiniest avera that they do, so that they have their full schar in Olam Haba. And so that's the Kelamuna, the Ein Ovel, and when it continues in the Pasuk, there's no injustice, means the flip side. Kishem Shem Hashamim Socher the Tzadikim, La'olam Abba, Fila Mitzvah Kalash Oisim, just like the Tzadikim are rewarded in Olam Abba for even the smallest mitzvah that they did. Tach Mashamim Socher the Rishoyim, La'olam Azeh, Fila Mitzvah Kalash Oisim, the same way the Rishoyim in this world are paid back in Olam Azeh for even the smallest mitzvah that they do, so that they don't have any schar left over for Olam Abba. So that's Hashem is being fair, and there's no injustice. Hashem always does things exactly fair. Marsha points out that we see the tzaddikim being punished in this world. We don't see the Rishoyim being punished in Olam Haba. So how are we saying that just as Hashem does in Olam Haba, so he does in this world? It should be the other way around. First, based on what we see in this world, we can deduce how things are in Olam Haba. So he says like this. So sometimes we see a tzaddik v'raloi, but olam hazeh. So don't wonder about it. Kelamuna, that the same way as the rosha is going to be punished in olam haba, even for the avera kala. You should know the reason why the tzaddik is suffering in this world is because he's being punished for an avera kala. And vice versa, you don't wonder about the rosh of a tovoi. So in short, in other words, the Gemara is giving us a one way of explaining the paradox of tzaddik v'raloi and rosh of a tovoi is based on this, that Hashem is cleaning up accounts in this world in order that everything will be straightened out in Olam Haba. And then you also have Marsha points out, you have different gusois. What exactly are we learning from what? On the face of it, Kelamuna should refer to the reward, that Hashem is faithful to give the reward, and Ein Ovel should refer to the punishment, that Hashem is never unfair in giving punishment. And here the Gemara seems to be doubting it the other way around. So different gusois. Now the pasuk continues, Tzadik v'yoshohu, Hashem is righteous and upright. Omru, so the Chacham said, what that means is, when a person is leaving this world to go to his eternal home, to Olam Haba, kol ma'asav niftorin or nifrotin lefanav, everything he did in the world, everything he did in his lifetime, is all given out, is all individually counted out in front of him. And he's told, kach v'kach osisa b'mokim ploini b'yoyim ploini, you did such and such in this place and on this day. Why this place and this day, Ben Yoyada explains. So the day we said before, Marsha said, because every malach that's created by his maisim has a particular connection with one particular day in the year. As far as the place, Ben Yoyada makes the point that the person does an aveda in a certain place, it leaves a roshim, it leaves a vestige of tumah in that place. So therefore, it's mentioned to him that you were in this particular place and you did that aveda. We find the flip side of it is, that the Maisim of Tzadikim in a particular place outlasts them a long time. There's a story involving one of them, involving some Rebbe, I don't remember who, was passing through the town where the Magen Avraham had lived like 150 years earlier, and he says, "I smell this delicious smell over here, a smell of Gan Eden." And they find, they do some research, and they find this is exactly where the Magen Avraham's house had stood 150 or 200 years earlier, and there's still a Reach Gan Eden up there. And he admits, yes, I did all of those things. And then he's told by the Beis Din Shamayla, sign off on it. Admit, you not only you admitted, but you have to sign off on what you did. And sure enough, he signs. Shenema, as the pasuk says, biyad kol adam yachdim. The pasuk says, through every person's hand, he signs. Marsha points out, the end of the pasuk is, lodas kol anshe ma'aseu, to know all the people what they did. So everything that he did b'maisa, then he signed with his hand, which is what he does the ma'asim with, and therefore, so he does that. Not only that, in front of the Beis Din Shamayla, a person accepts the justice of the verdict on himself. He says to the Beis Din Shamayla, Yofidantuni, you judge me correctly. This fulfills what it says in the pasuk, Laman titzdak b'davrecha, in order that you, Hashem, should be righteous in your words. In other words, when you say, Hashem, you announce what a person deserves for what he did in this world, Laman titzdak, you are justified by it because the person himself says that you are tzaddik. Different gears of it is that we learn that from Tzaddik v'Yoshehu as well. In any case, the point is that these psukim bear out this point that a person, it's not just the judgment is done against a person and he protests against it, but rather he recognizes the truth and the justice of it and he himself signs off on it. Yom Yom Mashiach HaGa'ola, Yud Sivan. The Alter Rebbe talks about in Tanya in Igeres HaKodesh, where you have a piece of Zohar over there that sounds on the face of it like it implies that we won't be learning Nigla, La'asid Lava, and the Alter Rebbe goes in great length over there to slug that up. And he says, for example, how is it possible, L'Yemos Mashiach, why will we not know, need to know Issa, the halachas of Issa V'Hetu? We're going to have to Shech Korbanus, we're going to have to Shech Tcholin, and you need to know the halachas of Shechita. And a person is not naturally born with the ability to do Shechita without training, and the knife itself is not going to be perfect forever as well. Therefore, the Alter Rebbe says, obviously, we're going to have to learn Nigla, we're going to have to know the halachas of Issa V'Hetu, Tumah V'Tahara, but as the Alter Rebbe goes on to say over there, the Nigla actually will be completely, perfectly revealed to every Jew. They're going to know it already from before without forgetting it. They won't need to be oisik in it. They'll need to know it, but they won't need to be oisik in it. As the Alter Rebbe explains over there, the main asik of learning at that time is going to be in Pnimiyah Satorah, because the concepts of Nigla are going to be very clear to everybody. Continuing halachas of Shabbos. When it comes to folding clothes, there's a lot of different dinim in it, what kind you're allowed and not allowed to fold. So basically, you shouldn't fold anything on Shabbos. If you fold it not on the original folds, then it's mutter. What people do in terms of folding their talesim on Shabbos, I'm not real sure. Many people actually do tack a fold that only matzah Shabbos for that reason. I think maybe if you're going to be using it later in the day, then maybe you have a certain heter for it. But otherwise, I'm not real sure. Speaking of talesim, if you have a talis that we're one over, any kind of clothing, where one end of it caught on fire, you're allowed to pour liquid on it, not where the fire is, so that when the fire reaches that wet area, then it'll go out. You can do only other kinds of liquids, though, but not water or any other kind of cleansing liquid, because there you have the issue of malabit. So you can pour on it, for example, you could pour on it soda or juice or something like that. That's not malabim.